Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area occupied by the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us. Seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking, we hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. On today's Earth Matters, we examine waste, recycling, and specifically plastics. In our first segment, I speak with Yusman Valianti, lead author of a report for the Smart Prosperity Institute, titled A Vision for a Circular Economy for Plastics in Canada, The Benefits of Plastics Without the Waste and How We Get It Right. After that, I speak with Colvin Lacken of York University, one of the creators of the Waste Wiki. The Waste Wiki is home to more than 6,000 studies on waste and provides users with the ability to interface with data so that they can make more informed decisions. That's at wastewiki.info.yorku.ca.
My focus has been on what used to be called industrial ecology and is now called circular economy. And it really is about sort of dealing with the externalities of producing things, so greenhouse gases, water emissions, solid waste, and trying to figure out how we, you know, reconfigure the environment so we get all of the economic activity, all of the growth, all of the sort of technological innovation and benefits as a society without the waste. And sort of that's been my focus, both working with commercial interests, with businesses to figure out how to reduce their costs, how to reduce pollution and enhance profitability, and working with governments to design laws and institutions that set up the basis on which industry can move towards that goal.
So have you seen a change in the attitude of business? As you say, there's an economic factor to it, whereas I'm assuming that years ago the waste was just another line along the budget, as you know, the cost of doing business. Has that attitude changed? Has it improved?
Well, I think global awareness of the impacts of climate change, I think issues around awareness of, you know, water pollution, and most recently, you know, the discussion of plastics in the environment really have captured the public's imagination on this. They're starting to understand, you know, the implications of some of these things, the cumulative effects of some of these things. And there's a real push for the public from action, and the public are consumers. And I think business is responding. I also think that governments are responding, and the response that you're getting from governments, things like banning certain types of plastics, driving electric vehicles through subsidies. We just saw some of that activity in the Canadian budget. So, you know, businesses looking at what governments are doing, governments are responding to the public concern. And I think they realize that, you know, the days of just taking raw materials and energy, shipping over to developing countries, producing products, shipping them back, using them, and then dumping them, that economic model is not going to work in the future. And so we need a wholesale evolution of how we produce and consume goods. You know, 45% of all of the greenhouse gas emissions that we generate are embedded in the goods that we consume. And so this also has a social equity or a wealth inequality aspect to it. I mean, if you look at globalization of production, that was really the product of being able to ship raw materials to places like China with very low cost, at very low cost, having, you know, low labor rates, low environmental standards there to produce goods, then having, again, low energy cost to move that produced goods back to North America. And the emissions and energy use and waste associated with how we produce things really drove globalization in many ways. And so if you, all your emissions associated with moving stuff around are unpriced, and, you know, that's a huge subsidy to how you produce things, and that sort of incentivizes being very wasteful. So I think we're going to go through an evolutionary period. I think we're in it right now. And that is not going to be so much, though there will be the creation of new goods and new innovation, it will also be how we've been producing and delivering services in the past, I think, is going to evolve. And it's going to evolve to be less wasteful in general, in specific, less carbon emissions, less solid waste, less energy use. We're going to focus on squeezing out value without wasting. So, you know, I think that's the objective.
I want to ask you right now, from your vantage point, who leads? Is it the public? Is it the business? Is it the government? Or whoever speaks the loudest?
There's a number of players in this area. I think if I look at the plastics issue, you had researchers that identified the problem. So, you know, Jenna Jambeck, Chelsea Rocheman identified the plastics in the ocean issue. There's a seminal paper that Jenna Jambeck put out in 2015 that caught the public's imagination. You then had people out in the environment, out in the marine environment, taking pictures, you know, and images in our sort of social media world are very powerful. That then captures the public's attention. And then policymakers who are, you know, when you talk of governments, they are supposed to be responsive to the electorate, the public, identify that as an issue, and they start moving, and then industry starts with this pattern that I've seen for a long time, which is immediately make commitments and enter into packs and sort of, you know, we'll make our packaging more recyclable and we'll try to achieve these recycling targets. So there's a bunch of public relations that starts up. And, you know, I think in this particular phase, that public relations is people aren't taking it as at face value the way they have in the past. And I think you now have policymakers that are going a lot further than they've gone before, and, you know, witness what's going on in the European Union on plastics. You know, I think it's kind of like a chain reaction that occurs. And the plastics issue is different than the climate change issue because we can't see carbon dioxide, and we only start to become aware of the need for action once the effects of climate change become manifest, which they are now quite clearly. But plastics, you can see them. You know, you can take a picture of an Indonesian beach covered in plastic bottles and plastic bags and whatnot. And so it's a visceral issue, and it's moving a lot quicker for that reason, that people can see it. They can see when a whale's stomach's cut open and there's 88 pounds of plastic in that whale. So, you know, I think it's a chain reaction, and all of these players are linked together. And sort of on the plastics issue, this is how it's evolved. But it's really governments responding to the public and sort of industry playing catch up right now. And, you know, the first knee-jerk reaction are these sort of commitments that they make, which I've seen these commitments for 30 years and not much coming out of them.
Now, you also mentioned China, and I want to ask you how much of a factor that is. China at one point said, hey, stop sending us this junk. It's of no value or little value to us. Sure, it helped our economy in years past, but now you're sending too much. Basically, they're telling the rest of the world, you got to be more responsible. You're just sending your junk, as you said, from one jurisdiction to another. The mobility of the waste has reached a tipping point, and now China has pushed back and said, we're not taking it anymore, forcing governments and entities to reevaluate how they're using plastic.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to that production chain that I described, where you extract raw materials, you ship them to China, you have your product manufactured, you ship the product back, you use the product in some cases once, and then you ship your waste back again. You ship it back to China. You ship it back as this sort of mixed plastic waste. And you were relying on the fact that the Chinese use recycled plastics in manufacturing and that they were willing to use low-cost labor to try to sort as much out as they could and dispose of the rest. And so a lot of North American quote-unquote recycling programs became delivering residential recycling services, your blue box, taking the mixed plastics that came out of the blue box and having a broker find a market for it, often in China or Vietnam or some market. And then it would often would disappear into these countries and be deemed to be quote-unquote recycled. And so we relied on that for a long time to sort of prop up what we claimed were our recycling rates when they were really just export rates in many cases. And so, you know, now these jurisdictions are saying we can't take your mixed plastic waste anymore. Part of our plastic pollution problem is the garbage coming out of these recycling facilities and going into the environment. And one of the ways we're going to mitigate the discharge of plastics is by not taking any more of your garbage into this country. That then's backed up into North America, and now you can see articles in The Atlantic and Wired magazine, in the New York Times, all in the last 10 days, talking about how recycling in America is collapsing. Canada's has a bit of a different story. It has a bit of a different story because we've had policies to deal with waste a lot longer and a lot more wider spread in Canada than the United States does. So we've had things like container deposit systems, deposit return systems, where if you live in D.C., if you live in Alberta, if you live in Saskatchewan, Quebec, you know, even in Ontario for beverage alcohol, you pay a deposit on a beverage container and you get your deposit back when you return it. And we've had product stewardship, which is producers paying for covering some or all of the costs of municipal recycling systems. So you have Ontario at 50%, Quebec at 100%. You have BC, which is a full producer responsibility model where producers actually operate the recycling system. And these policies, they're kind of a patchwork. They're all a little bit different in each province. They have really been the basis on which we've built a nascent plastics recycling sector. So Canada, yes, we were exporting plastics. Yes, there was an impact from the closure of the Asian markets. But Canada has generally fared better than the United States has because it does have a lot more investment in recycling, and especially plastics recycling. And, you know, British Columbia, for instance, because of the producer responsibility program, it was affected on mixed paper. That's certainly the closure of the Asian markets to paper had an effect, but on plastics, it weathered the storm. And the reason for that is the producer responsibility program induced the building of a dedicated plastics recycling facility, and that facility was able to handle all the material coming out of the blue boxes as well as the plastic containers that are collected under deposit in British Columbia.
A lot of what you're talking about is captured in the report that you just wrote for the Smart Prosperity Institute called A Vision for a Circular Economy for Plastics in Canada. Can other people, other jurisdictions benefit from reading this report?
Yeah, I think some of the things in it, especially related to extended producer responsibility, in my mind, the jurisdictions that can most benefit from it are developing countries who don't even have a rudimentary waste management system right now. So when I say the plastics recycling rate in Canada is 9%, you don't see a lot of plastics blowing around Canadian communities because we have a waste management system. And despite the fact we don't recycle it, we do manage to capture it and inter it in some way in landfills, or we burn it for an energy waste from waste facilities. So we dispose of it in those two approaches. And developing countries, they don't even have the ability to collect up this plastic and manage it because the cost of waste management are so high. So a policy like extended producer responsibility, which takes the producers of products that end up with plastic waste or plastic packaging waste and makes them responsible for setting up recycling systems, will have the greatest impact in those developing countries. So where producers are required to operate deposit return systems for beverage container systems, set up systems to buy back plastics. So you have what's called the informal waste sector in developing countries, or they're called rag pickers that go and try to collect recyclable materials and sell those recyclable materials, when you have an extended producer responsibility program and producers actually pay for those materials to be collected, that's going to be have the greatest effect in pulling plastics away from the environment and back into recycling systems in those developing countries. So I think of all the recommendations in the Smart Prosperity paper, I think extended producer responsibility is one that offers the greatest opportunity to developing countries to begin to pull that material up away from the environment and back into recycling systems.
Do you also talk about the fact that a lot of plastic material that we use, packaging, is mixed plastic? It's not one type of plastic easily recycled. Anybody that collects it has to pull these different things apart, the cap or the label or the bottom or the top or whatever. It's a different kind of plastic, and it makes it harder for recyclers to recycle that particular plastic. Is that a factor, a major factor?
Yes, absolutely. So if you go buy a meat product or, you know, a number of these sort of laminated pouches that contain soups or beverages in them, they're made of multiple layers of material, in some cases a metallic layer, and then a couple of layers of plastic polymer. They're laminated together. So these materials are called laminated plastics. You know, they're hard to recycle as designed today and with current recycling technology. But if you as a public policy maker say these need to be collected and they need to be recycled, and recycled means producing materials that can go back into production, then what you do is you create what's called technological forcing, which is you then force the producers to go back and talk to the recyclers and say, you know, under this extended producer responsibility, I've got to collect 90% of these back and I've got to recycle them into raw materials that can be used again. And right now, that's not working. And so the recycler will tell you, well, here's my problem. This is why I can't manage this material under the technology I have today. But if I were to employ some new technological innovation, I could potentially recycle them, but you may need to redesign your package a little bit, and here's the problem that I'm having. So this dialogue starts to happen between the recycling folks and the producers, who then back up that discussion to the packaging manufacturers, and you get this dialogue going about how to both redesign the package and innovate on the recycling side, so that this package can now be recycled. You know, there's a whole sector of the petrochemical industry that's emerging right now, and that's the chemical recycling industry for plastics. And so we have a number of players in Canada that are at the commercialization stage of technologies to recycle various polymers. And what they would tell you is that they, A, can't get enough recycled material into the system to scale up, and they don't have enough demand for what they're producing, and they don't have a dialogue with producers about segregating these hard to recycle plastics so they can actually do some research and development work on them. And so, you know, what I see is by setting requirements to have things recycled and to have products have recycled content in them, you will have this emerging dialogue happen about package and product redesign and recycling system redesign. And those two things will happen together. And there'll be an emergent outcome from that, which will be higher recycling rates. I can give you an example.
Okay.
So Norway, for instance, has said that beverage producers need to get 95% of their plastic bottles back for recycling, and they need to be recycled. And the response from the Norwegian beverage sector has been to institute a deposit return system. They now collect 97% of the bottles that are sold in Norway. And they went and redesigned the bottles so that there is fewer resin types used in the closures that you describe in the labels. And they've standardized the resins that are used in the bottles in such a way that it simplified recycling. So the government set a performance standard, and industry responded by using an economic instrument, a deposit, to collect containers. and packaging redesign to make facilitate recycling. And we've seen that in Canada too. We've seen that with, you know, where producers need to pay for curbside recycling, major retailers got together and standardized the plastics that are used in clamshells into one type of PET that's more recyclable.
I want to go back to the public. We've heard plastics, as you said, it's in the news, it's on top of mind, but the public still think if I just throw it in the blue box, it's taken care of. Does the public need to have a bit more responsibility in understanding the recycling process and what it is that they're actually throwing in the blue box, and taking a step back when they purchase something, should they look at it and say, you know what, I don't think this is really a good thing, and use that power to drive the whole circular economy? What do you think about that?
Let me give you an example in another area, and then I'll come back to this role of the consumer. When you go to buy a car, you don't question whether the safety belts are going to work in a car accident, or the airbags are going to work in a car accident, or, you know, are the tires going to explode when you're driving down the highway? And the reason you go in and you purchase on price and on performance is you know that a lot of those safety features are the subject of performance standards that are set by government. So, you know, when planes crash, the question becomes, where was the regulator in ensuring that pilots knew what the protocol was, and where was the manufacturer of the aircraft in ensuring that pilots knew what the safety protocol was? So these performance standards are ubiquitous in our society. I mean, virtually everything you buy is the subject of some sort of performance standard. So if you're going to ask consumers to go shopping and do some kind of environmental assessment on every single package they put in their shopping cart, you really are asking a lot. And so for the consumer, it should be effectively, they know that when they buy a product or a package, that it is not only recyclable, but will be recycled, because the requirement on producers is that the packaging is recyclable and that it's recycled to some standard. Now, where the producer goes to, or sorry, the consumer goes to interact with the recycling system, just like the producers market to us to sell us things, whether it's soft drinks or cell phones, the producer then will also be marketing to consumers to ensure that they put the right stuff in the right recycling system. So if there's a deposit on the beverage container, where to take that container back to get their deposit back, or if it's going into their curbside recycling system, what goes in that blue box. And that really requires the producers to not only be operating the system to produce the products that go to consumers, but also to operate the system that collects and recycles the products, so they can market to consumers in the right way to interact with that recycling system that they've set up. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And unfortunately, our time is just about up. So I'm just going to conclude by saying, Usman, thank you very much for talking to us on Earth Matters. The subtitle of your report for the Smart Prosperity Institute is The Benefits of Plastics Without the Waste and How We Can Get It Right. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, let's turn to another area that you and Mark Winfield are involved in, and that is the Waste Wiki project, which is very exciting. It's like Wikipedia, but for waste. So tell us about that.
So I think that's a pretty good summary. So our goal is to create Canada's, if not North America's, largest repository for waste management data, literature, topics, etc. An enormous amount of data actually exists in our sector, but it's very difficult to navigate, to find. So unless you're somebody who actively works with that information, you're not going to know where to find it or what to do with it. So what the Waste Wiki tries to do is consolidate all of that information and then turn it into something that the average person or average policymaker can navigate. So what we focus on a lot is data visualization. So we take all of that data and create dashboards. We aggregate all of the literature studies into various categories that people will readily recognize. And the hope is that people will use that as a resource to make informed decision making. So we wanted to make sure we had a level playing field for everybody, whether you are Toronto or Timbuktu in Northern Ontario. And that's why it was a free service. But the truth is very, very few municipalities or stakeholders actually use it. So you can, what's the expression? You can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And so that's kind of the situation you find yourself in now.
Now, was it originally designed for municipalities or is it open to the public?
It's open to the public. I think the given my perspective at the time, it was intended for municipal and producer stakeholders because they have a much better sense of, you know, what does like a gap diversion rate mean. However, if we have keen or motivated citizens, it's open to the public, and we actually would encourage citizens to use the WasteWiki resource because part of it is actually explaining really complex topics in 5 slides or less. So we tried to take mental themes and make it as easily communicable as possible and in layman's terms. So once again, we haven't had a lot of uptake, but that was the intended goal of the project, to make things more accessible.
Right. So you've got certain topics such as economics, policy, climate change, safety, and technology innovation that people can dive in. And as you say, it might be simplified or a few slides or a presentation from wherever. You're gathered all this information from around the world. And you've also got, is it 600 different research papers that normally most people would not be able to access? And there it is all in one location.
Yeah, so one of the coolest things about being with the university is that we can, I don't want to use the word circumvent, but a lot of the publication rules don't really apply because it's not using it for commercial purposes. The intent is to disseminate knowledge. And so one thing I hated when I was a student or even when I worked for the government was a paywall. Like, I find this paper I really want to use, and suddenly it's $40-something to download one paper. So the WasteWiki tries to remove that barrier. And in the future, what you're actually going to see is a searchable engine. So the way it's kind of organized now, I'll be honest, isn't most user-friendly. It's all uploaded to Google Drive. But our goal is to literally have like a science direct search box where you can search for whatever paper you want and download it. But it's being downloaded on the York side, so it's on our system. So it still adheres to copyright laws, but allows people to view and use the information as they see fit.
A lot of great information. I mean, I just sort of scratched the surface and was amazed that everything that was there, going back a number of years on worldwide research on various different topics, and not just different items in North America, but around the world as well. Things from Japan, things from Malaysia, studies that compare different things, and again, your paper, a comparison of single and multi-stream recycling systems is one of the many different things that are on that site. Tell me a little bit about the data dashboard.
Okay, so every municipality in Ontario has to report into something called the data call. So the data call is basically, I want to say government, it's not really, it's an arm's length government organization, but for the purposes of simplicity, we'll just say the government. It's their way of tracking how much municipalities recycle, what did they recycle, how much did it cost, and it's very, very granular, and they have it for every municipality since 2002. The downside of this data is that the people who manage and collect it, they only care about collecting it. They don't care about using it for analysis. And so then they post it online in basically an Excel file that is impossibly difficult to navigate unless you're very familiar with Excel. And given my prior life as a consultant and with the ministry, I spent a lot of time looking at these files. And fortunately, I am well-versed in Excel. But I said, how can I give this to somebody who doesn't have that math background or Excel background and have them understand it? So that data dashboard was creating a visual interface. So taking literally tens of thousands of entries and allowing the user to just select Toronto from a drop-down menu and just get a series of graphs to say, how much newsprint did you recycle over the past 15 years? How much did it cost you? And so that was the intent of the project, was to basically make the data as accessible for any stakeholder, but once again, tend to be municipalities because it's the municipal data, without having to have a keen knowledge of Excel. So one thing you'll really notice in our industry is the further you go outside of the GTA, the fewer resources policy planners have. So Toronto has statisticians and data modelers, fantastic. You go up to even Thunder Bay, which is a fairly large city, they have one guy managing the entire waste department. And so he or she should not be responsible for mastering Excel plus all the other stuff they have to do. So we just wanted to make their job a little bit easier.
Kelvin Lakin from York University, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you so much for your time.